Today on Straight Talk Africa, a candid conversation on the political significance of the Ugandan Kingdom of Buganda. That discussion is coming up next with the Right Honorable Charles Peter Mayiga, the Katikkiro or Prime Minister of Buganda, on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America headquarters here in Washington. I am Sheka Sali, and today it's a candid conversation on the political significance of the Ugandan Kingdom of Buganda. The Buganda Kingdom plays a significant role in Uganda since the restoration of traditional kingdoms in 1993. This cultural institution has served as an essential support base for politicians running for office, spearheading cultural and development programs within the country. My colleague Paul Ndiho has more on the story.
At the top of Mengo Hill in Uganda's bustling capital, Kampala, the Bulange Palace, a home of the Buganda Kingdom, symbolizes the country's rich history of the monarchy. The Buganda Kingdom is one of the four Ugandan kingdoms and perhaps the most influential politically and strategically. Cultural institutions are not supposed to have any real political power, but Buganda, with a population of nearly 12 million people, is more than just a cultural institution. It's a political force. Buganda Kingdom has embarked on the social, economic, and infrastructure transformation that sets the bar for the rest of the country. Charles Peter Mayiga, the Prime Minister, or commonly known as the Katikkiro, has been at the center of development programs. Katikkiro Mayiga is visiting the Washington, D.C. area to meet and mingle with members of the Buganda community from different parts of North America. His mission is to meet and listen to the king's subjects and then report back to the king.
What do you want to be remembered to have been good at many years down the road? People in the diaspora, do you realize that in order to protect, promote, and sustain our culture, we need to be economically sound? Do you realize that? We want a significant investment program from the diaspora.
The Buganda Kingdom boasts of the largest community, Baganda. They pride themselves as having a unique culture, good morals, and a close association with other clans to boot. Margaret Mwonge is one of the 11 representatives of the kingdom in North America. She explains.
Kabaka, he's what I would call the custodian of the sacred trust of Buganda. He does not come in to rule over the people. He comes in to mingle and look at his people and direct them and inspire them. He does not give them orders. What he does is to listen, and that's why he deploys all of us everywhere in diaspora to go and listen to what his subjects want to do, how they feel and how they're getting on, what challenges they're facing, and then report back to him.
The Baganda were instrumental in the current Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni's rise to power 33 years ago. Museveni based his five-year guerrilla struggle in the kingdom's heartland in Ruwero. Since then, the Baganda have supported and helped him to stay in power. But a simmering dispute over land and power between President Museveni's government and Buganda Kingdom has persisted for a long time. Kabaka Ronald Mwenda Mutebi wants more autonomous control over resources in his kingdom, such as land and taxes. But the government says the king is only a cultural figure and must steer clear of politics. The disputes over land and the power with Buganda sparked violent protests in 2009 that killed dozens of people. Demonstrators, mostly youth from Buganda, blocked roads and set fire to vehicles and tires, protesting the decision to block the Kabaka from visiting parts of his kingdom, the Kayunga district in the eastern part of Buganda. A couple of months later, fire gutted a mausoleum built in 1860 and destroyed much of the Kasubi tombs the final resting place of the kings of Buganda and a UNESCO World Heritage Site. The cause of the blaze was never determined, and the reconstruction of the tombs is still ongoing. Paul Ndiho, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Paul, for that interesting report. I would also like to thank my colleague Vincent Macaulay for hosting Straight Talk Africa last week while I was away in the Czech Republic. Now joining me here in the studio is our distinguished guest, the one and only, the Right Honorable Charles Peter Maiga, the Katichiro or Prime Minister of the Ugandan Kingdom of Buganda. Mr. Katikiro Owechitibwa, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much for having me here. I'm also humbled to have this program with you. I mean, you're a legend back home, and it's a rare opportunity. I think that I have been offered to be hosted here on this show. Thank you very much.
Well, I have to say, of course, that thank you so much for your compliments and support. And I have to note that I had hoped that I would have a free hand in interviewing and interacting with you. But unfortunately, you seem to be a very, very huge newsmaker to such an extent that my questions would most likely reflect the interest of the audience in you.
Well, the Kingdom of Buganda, I think, is central to issues back home. So I don't think it's entirely surprising that there is that kind of interest.
Very interesting. You've been here for a couple of weeks now. How has your trip been so far?
So far, so good. We came to meet the Baganda and their Ugandan friends, mm-hmm. and other friends, mm-hmm. in the diaspora in the USA and Canada. We do that every other year because many of them are American citizens, mm-hmm. and their children are Americans. But then the Kabaka, the king, wants them to keep in touch. We want them never to forget their roots, their heritage. And if you don't interact, if you don't interface, that can easily happen. So we do this every other year, and the convention is quite a big affair.
To what extent did the conference meet your expectations?
Well, first of all, the theme for this year's convention was centered on the youth. Mm-hmm. Many children were brought over, and young adults who are staying in the U.S. And it was interesting to see them perform cultural dances, mm-hmm. cite poems in Luganda, you know, reciting their clan lineages. It was very, very encouraging. And they've got a Luganda Academy as well. And I told them they can learn Luganda and speak it, and at the same time, you know, speak English, of course, like any other American.
Very interesting. Owechitibwa Katikiro, or the Right Honorable Prime Minister Maiga, there are some people who would like to know whether you are the Prime Minister of Buganda or whether you are the Prime Minister of Baganda. How do you respond to that?
I'm the Prime Minister of Buganda. Buganda isn't a tribal kingdom. Actually, by the time of the colonial incursions, Buganda was at the stage of statehood. It had a government, it had institutions, and it had incorporated people from other areas for a very long period of time. Mm-hmm. And being, you know, a subject of the king is not necessarily biological. If you reside within Buganda and you acknowledge that the Kabaka, the king, is the custodian of our heritage, is the embodiment of our traditions and customs, then mm-hmm. we regard you as his subject. So I'm the Katikiro, I'm the Prime Minister of Buganda, not Baganda.
During the heydays, of course, Buganda was almost an empire, really.
Mm,
was true. A nation, an empire. And there are historians, as a matter of fact, who go back to King Kabaka Mwanga and say that perhaps he may in fact have been the last powerful Bugandan king.
Well, dynamics change in every society. Of course, colonialism, you know, uprooted a number of our things, as you know.
Mm.
And of course, Buganda as a kingdom lost the sovereignty that it enjoyed. You're talking about Buganda being an empire. The Kabaka Mutesa I, for example, ruled all the way up to northern Tanzania. And his great-grandfather, Kabaka Mawanda, had overrun Busoga many years before the British came.
Yes.
And of course, everyone who came to the interior of Africa, in Central Africa from the coast, from Mombasa or Zanzibar or Dar es Salaam, you know, was searching for the kingdom of Buganda. And if the king didn't approve of your coming into his kingdom, like not granting you a visa in today's speak, you wouldn't come in.
You wouldn't come in.
Yes. So, but things have changed. Colonialism upstaged us. We lost the sovereignty. But it is good to work as Ugandans. It's good for as long as we work out the relations between the different communities that make up Uganda.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful to have other Ugandans as part, you know, we work with them as one country. The problem is failure to abide by the law or to oblige with the ethos of good governance.
Of course, as you say, society is not static. It is dynamic. Things have to change, and people and societies have to also respond to those changes. There was a time, for example, as you say, when Buganda was a great empire. You're talking about before 1884, when Bismarck, the Chancellor of Germany, chaired this meeting around this big horseshoe table in Berlin, basically dividing Africa among European powers, with not a single African present during that meeting.
True.
It is very interesting that the Americans, in fact, enjoyed observer status. No African was there.
Yeah.
And Buganda eventually, I think, was the sort of empire that inspired the present day name of Uganda.
True.
Do you get some royalties out of that?
Nah. You know, the people from the East African coast who acted as guides to bring in the Europeans and Arabs before them into the hinterland, they can't pronounce Bu. So they would call it Uganda. And they would write the kingdom starting with U, and eventually they called it Uganda. I think Buganda is the cornerstone of the country called Uganda. And no royalties, but we're fine.
Now, Buganda, of course, also is said in history to have played a subcolonial role in the sense that it did enjoy very unique privileges during the time when the British were essentially overseeing Uganda as a protectorate. Is that true?
That's not true. That's a misrepresentation of history. Buganda earned her place as far as the relationship between the British and Buganda is concerned. Buganda earned her place. Look, Buganda, by the time the British came, was the strongest entity.
Mm.
Like I told you a few minutes back, the king was governing all the way to northern Tanzania and even Busoga. And actually, Bunyoro was losing territory.
Bunyoro Chitara
kingdom was very, very powerful. But I think they had lost their power by around the 15th, 16th century.
Mm-hmm.
And Buganda was on the move. And the expansion of Buganda was, you know, was as a result of war. Or maybe the ingenuity of the different Kabakas who governed the kingdom.
Right.
Like, if you see the relationship between the Kabaka of Buganda and one prince then called Inkore and the current county of Kabula. You can see that there are so many maneuvers that took place. So it's not entirely true. I mean, after all, African kingdoms and states went on expanding with the time, given different circumstances. Those who got the arms from the Arabs expanded. So the British, as far as the Baganda were concerned, were arming them to expand their territory. It is simple as that. I don't think the Baganda or anybody else at that time knew anything about colonialism. Nobody was very clear that colonialism was about actually stealing resources. I don't think they saw it in that sense. They saw themselves as allying themselves with a powerful person, a powerful entity from a far-off place. Anybody could have done that if the Banyoro or the Langis had what it took to ally with the British, they would have done the same. It's a very lame interpretation of history, really.
You allied with the likes of Captain Lugard?
Not really, because Lugard destroyed a lot of Buganda, as a matter of fact. You should remember that Kabaka Mwanga tried to kick Lugard out, and they just subjugated the Buganda. They killed so many people. Lugard killed so many people in Buganda, the Battle of Mengo. So many people died. What the leadership in Buganda decided to do was not to fight the newcomer, because they realized it was very strong. They were not going to emerge victorious.
Right.
I think it was a smart move, because there is no place in Africa which tried to resist colonialism that succeeded. Because there is no place in the world, Shaka.
Because the British had the gunpowder.
Yes, the Maxim gun.
The Maxim gun.
Even the Chinese. Some politicians said the Chinese. But you know, European powers were in control of all the coastal cities in China, and they were getting all the goods they wanted. So there is no one who escaped colonialism. But colonialism is a question of superior technology.
Now,
it's not ideological, as some people think.
You mentioned about Bunyoro Chitara.
Yeah.
Bunyoro Chitara, of course, was also a formidable,
yeah,
great empire.
True.
Especially under the Omwami Kabarega. But isn't it true that Buganda, for example, entered into an alliance with the British to defeat Kabarega?
Well, alliances didn't start with the coming of the British. The Kingdom of Toro was established because there was an alliance between them and Buganda.
Right.
And the Kingdom of Toro in its entirety was part of the Kingdom of Bunyoro. There is no story there. Alliances are part of strategy.
Professor Hans Morgenthau, who once taught at the Johns Hopkins University, wrote a book called Politics Among Nations. And in it he talks about there are no permanent allies, no permanent adversaries. They are merely permanent interests.
Maybe he's right. Because you should remember that Kabaka Mwanga and Omuka Makabarega,
eventually, they actually became together.
They came together. They tried to fight the British.
Right.
At some point, they were both captured in I think, Acholi.
Yes.
Or in Lango.
Yes.
When now they were.
And they were both exiled into Seychelles.
The Seychelles. So, you know, after independence, the politicians have tried to divide Ugandans. And they give lopsided views about how the Baganda related with the British. These were just strategic maneuvers for them to survive and expand if possible. Anyone would have done that. It is nothing like an alliance formed with malice to undermine the Munyoro or someone else. Those were the dynamics. Just like today, there is an alliance of the Western powers to continue with whatever they're doing in Africa.
Right.
And like I said before, colonialism was merely a question of superior technology. The Europeans had, because of technology, acquired arms. And because capitalism was in its early stages, they were looking for markets and resources. It's not something which we cry about like a misbehaving child in a home. Those were the dynamics of the time.
Is it possible for anyone, for any power, to rule or govern Uganda without the help or the assistance of Buganda?
Well, we are, look, the population of Buganda is about 12 million. the capital, Kampala, and every other major installation in the country is within the Kingdom of Buganda. 70% of the country's GDP is within the Kingdom of Buganda, because the World Bank says it's in a radius of 80 kilometers from Kampala, which is really the Kingdom of Buganda. Of course, the Kingdom of Buganda is headed by the Kabaka, the king, who has a huge following. I think it is only wise for whoever wants to rule Uganda to have some sort of cooperation or understanding or whatever with Buganda.
And at one time, in fact, when you talk about economically, Buganda had the monopoly over the growing of coffee as a major cash crop economy.
Yeah, true. As a matter of fact, even up to independence, Buganda contributed about 60% of the country's national wealth. When you go to the colonial records, you see that very well. But again, it goes back. I don't think because Buganda was special. It's just because Buganda had reached a state, you know, the stage of statehood. It was organized. So it was easy for the leaders in Buganda to make people grow coffee.
It was exposed.
It was exposed.
It was civilized.
Actually, Kabaka Mutesa the First sent emissaries to England.
Correct.
Said Wajina Mukadde.
Right.
Before even the 1894 agreement, which formally started the colonial era. So they knew a few things about the outside world. So that explained. And in any case, everything that the British started in Uganda started in the kingdom, because they were based there too. The schools, the hospitals, everything, essentially. So it is not surprising that they were in the lead as far as economic growth was concerned. And it is true. But even today, because of what I've just explained, I think it is the heart, really, of the economic activities of the country.
The nucleus.
It's the nucleus.
The epicenter.
That's true.
Now, it also became so advanced to the extent that it was very... It developed social, political, sophisticated institutions.
Well, yeah, you can say that. I mean, you can say that. Because with the Kabaka at the top, he's got a government headed by the Katikkiro. He's got the Luchiko, the parliament.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the chiefs all the way to the village. The village chief, the parish chief, the sub-county chief, the county chief. And actually, that system is what was incorporated in its entirety to the rest of the country. And it is still used, by the way, with variations here and there. The LC system, as a matter of fact, is based on Buganda's traditional administrative structure.
Talking about that, it is very interesting that Buganda had a very liberal immigration policy to such an extent that it didn't matter where you came from. If you came to Buganda and you paid allegiance to the Kabaka, spoke Luganda the language, paid goat land and paid the land taxes and what have you, you became a Muganda.
Yeah. And the validity of that can be established from the Ugandan martyrs. You know, the Ugandan martyrs, some of them were chiefs in the Kabaka's court.
Right.
Matia Murumba, for example, he was from Busoga.
Right.
And he had risen because he settled in Singo, that is Mitiana now, Singo County, and Mukwenda is the county chief of Singo, had raised him through the ranks. Kagwa was a Munyoro, actually, it's supposed to be called Kawa. But the Baganda corrupted it to Kagwa. I think Gonzaga was also... They were a mixture, and these were very, very close to the Kabaka. The martyrs, they were around the king. And these were people who, with time, were going to be chiefs, were going to be, who knows, maybe even Katikkiro, prime minister. So, because you see, the way Buganda started... It was only three counties, Chaddondo, Maokota, and Busiro. And the original Buganda, the authentic Buganda, if you want. And those three, they were saying they were getting powers from Sese. Sese had its own sort of chief, but There were powers. That was what was believed.
The islands of Sese.
Yes. The gods that protected Buganda came from Sese. Actually, many people still believe that those gods are there watching over Buganda.
Very interesting.
Yes. That was the nucleus of Buganda. And it went on growing through conquest. That's why it didn't matter much then whether you came from Bunyoro or Chigezi or Busoga, because after all, the territory that Buganda acquired was occupied by different people.
Mm.
And there are people who are trying to bring that back.
Buganda was an inclusive nation state, basically.
That's true.
Just like modern day United States of America.
That's very true. And that's why I was telling you that today in Buganda, if you pay allegiance to the Kabaka, even today, you are subject of the king as far as we are concerned. The condition for us, you must respect the king and, you know, acknowledge the heritage.
Very interesting. Now, you talk about being a subject of the Kabaka. You happen to be two things in one. One, you are a subject of the Kabaka, in which case you owe allegiance to an individual authority who happens to be the Kabaka, and you are entitled to no constitutional rights. You basically are in a situation where you expect to receive privileges from the Kabaka. On the other hand, you also happen to be a citizen of Uganda, which means that you owe allegiance to the state, the state of Uganda, in which case you actually have constitutional rights.
Yeah.
You have inalienable rights or birthrights.
Yeah.
How do you reconcile the two?
But I think that is easy.
Mm.
I mean, it's comparable to a home in a village. You are master of your own house.
Mm-hmm.
You set rules within your house. But there are village rules and regulations to be complied with. It depends on the situation. For example, in Buganda, you're not going to marry a girl of your clan. Custom doesn't allow you to do that.
Doesn't allow that.
And there was a couple who were of the same clan who tried to get married. And they were stopped by the parents and they went to the high court. And the judge said that would be repugnant to the social order of things, the custom. So I think it depends on the situation. And I think, and for us in Buganda, a federal system of government solves that completely.
What do you call federal?
People say call it federal, but and again, you know why they say federal?
Yes.
Because they want to make it look like Uganda, a Buganda thing.
Ugandanize it.
Or maybe Ugandanize it.
Yes.
But federalism is about sharing power. It.
But you did actually enjoy federal status as per the independence constitution of 1962.
Up to 1967.
So what happened?
Obote, you know, abrogated the constitution.
Yes, but later you allied with the National Resistance Movement, led by now President Yoweri Museveni, and you requested for essentially what people call a Biafe.
Yes.
Meaning the restoration of the Buganda kingdom as it were.
Yeah.
Did you get it?
We are not yet there. Of course, the monarchy was restored.
The monarchy was restored.
But it didn't come with the other characteristics which we yearn, like a federal system of government.
Mm-hmm.
And the Odok Commission, there was a commission, a constitutional commission headed by Chief Justice Benjamin Odoki.
Mm-hmm.
90% of the people in Uganda say we want a federal system of government. And incidentally, 65% of Ugandans said the same.
Mm.
And there was another commission headed by Professor Frederick Sempe.
Yes.
He's a Lord Don.
Yes, I remember. I know him.
Yes. And again, the same demands came out, but the Constituent Assembly never respected that. But you know, I tell people the time not to worry so much, because the kingdom has the time. We've been around about 1,000 years.
And unfortunately for me, time is not our best ally. You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa, and we'll have more of our discussion in a moment. So please don't go away, because we'll be right back with you.
We're talking about the news and issues you're talking about,
sharing stories of development and growth across Africa, around the world, and in our lives. Topics that inform, empower,
and change the rules.
It's time for Our Voices
with me, Heidi Adams Fitzpatrick,
and Hadiza Kiari,
and Ayan Bior,
and Orion Itangi Shaka.
It's time for Our Voices.
If you like today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook, keywords Straight Talk Africa.
We appreciate all of the audience feedback. Straight Talk Africa streams live every Wednesday on Facebook. You can watch our show there and leave a comment. Now let's look at what's on tap for next week's program.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an examination of the presidential elections in Malawi and South Africa. Peter Mutharika and Cyril Ramaphosa were both democratically elected. But do their victories reflect the will of the people? The power of the incumbency on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Today we are having a conversation on the political significance of the Ugandan Kingdom of Buganda. Our distinguished guest is the Right Honorable Charles Peter Maiga, the Katikiro or Prime Minister of the Ugandan Kingdom of Buganda. Oweshitibwa Katikiro, the Right Honorable Prime Minister, Charles Peter Maiga, I have to say again that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
Must thank you again, myself.
You're most welcome, sir. Now, we were talking about the status of the Kingdom of Uganda. What about some people on the ground who basically say you did not get the real deal, that you did not get the restoration of the Kingdom of Buganda, as it were? In fact, in the local lingo, they call it Bioya Bianswa.
Yeah, Bianswa.
Meaning, it's not the real deal.
Well, matters of public concern hardly have black and white. They're usually gray areas. Of course, the ultimate resolution of the Buganda question involves the federal system of government, federalism in place, where states that want to have internal control over their issues are let alone. They are left alone to, as per the constitution, to carry out their internal, you know, issues, to handle the internal issues. And for the central government to handle the, of course, the national issues, the army, the national economy, the national development policies. We are not yet there. But it's difficult to imagine that we're going to have, it's not a scientific experiment with predetermined results. You deal with human beings. Of course, the CA let us down, the Constituent Assembly let us down, because that's what the people demanded. But when, you know, we had the break, I was telling you that we have the time. What I meant by that, the kingdom of Buganda is still here. We shall demand what we feel are entitled to. If the current national leaders don't want to grant it, then there will be others after them. That's what I mean. So, regimes come and regimes go. But culture and heritage is not as short-lived as regimes. What we are talking about is not some selfish demand by a few individuals somewhere in a corner. The federalism is perceived as the best way of protecting whatever is, you know, whatever has remained of our heritage. But also, it would give us a chance to handle internal issues, internal affairs. Look at the environment. There is so much environmental degradation in Uganda, not only in Buganda, but everywhere. Why can't the kingdom of Bunyoro Chitara handle their internal affairs? Why can't they deal with the environment? Why can't they deal with their history and culture? Why can't they deal with education and health? I don't see any reason why a president in Entebbe should worry about forests in Bunyoro. I don't see any reason. So, what is important is for people to remain focused and know to, for them to know what they want, for them to work on the issues that they can work on. That's why we have these development programs. Because the employment of young people isn't going to wait for the re-establishment of a federal system of government. Universities churn out youngsters every year. They need jobs, you know. People are dying of poverty in the villages. You need to go there and do something about it.
Do you have the ability, for example, to provide employment for the youth?
Well, the ability, I think we do. The ability is not necessarily financial all the time. At times, what we tell them is even more valuable than money.
But you seem to be experiencing a very, very high unemployment rate.
Yeah, it's exceedingly high in Uganda today. Most of the young people are not employed. So what the Kabaka tells us to do is to initiate ideas that can, you know, start companies and programs which can employ some people. We try to do that. It's humble, but whoever wants to make a long journey must take the first step. And that's the philosophy that guides us. What we've done so far is humble, but it's a beginning nonetheless.
What is the relationship really between the Buganda Kingdom and the central government as it were? Because I remember back in 2009, we are talking about 10 years ago, I remember the Kabaka was prevented, for example, to access part of his kingdom. Yeah. We're talking about Kayunga Bugerere.
Kayunga riots, they call them.
Yes, which was under an individual by the name, if I remember correctly, Captain Baker Kimezi Sabanyala.
Yeah, we you said the relationship between the Buganda Kingdom and the central government, we respect each other. That's what I can say. We talk to each other.
But is it a mutually political, respectable marriage? Because there are some people, frankly, who look at it and say, wait a minute, we are actually looking at perhaps a couple planning a marriage concentrating on divorce.
I don't think so. I don't want to call it a marriage. Like where we started, I mean, the king has his own programs. He has his own work. The president, of course, has his own work. He's the president of the country. The king carries out his duties. And, you know, we try to work within the confines of the law. And if there is need for the president and the king to talk, they talk. Recently, the president visited the Kabaka in Banda.
Right.
Sometime back, the king went to the state house in Entebbe.
Right.
They talk. I engage with the central government ministers.
But he was prevented 10 years ago from accessing.
Yes, and there were riots. There were riots. Yes. And I think it was a learning experience for the people in the central government as well. Because people are not going to be taking down these things lying down. They are going to rise up and say, don't treat us like that.
like this. Treat us with respect. Mm. After all, it was clear breach of the law anyway.
Tell us about the benefits and the significance of the Karisho institution, as it were.
Well, we do not just exist in a vacuum. For example, in Uganda, I'm called Maiga because I belong to the Mutima. Mutima is the heart, the heart clan.
Mm.
That defines me. That has defined us, members of the Mutima clan, for as long as anyone can remember. And we need to protect that. I think the kingdom, culture, history, heritage gives you a sense of belonging. You do not exist by mistake or by fate or by chance. So the kingdom wraps up all these cultural mores that define us as a people. And I think even at the national level, if we are going to have true national unity, there must be respect of the different heritages that comprise the country called Uganda. That's how important it is, because Uganda is as recent as 1926.
Right.
And I was talking about Buganda Kingdom nearing 1,000 years. So you can clearly understand why it's important that we safeguard our history, we safeguard our cultures, our background, our roots.
What are you doing with the Kasubi tombs?
We are working on them. We are working on them. It's a very difficult job, because certain clans must do certain things. It's not like any other hut you find. If it were like an ordinary house, we built a building called Masengere.
Mm-hmm.
It is next to Bulang. It's bigger than Bulang, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It was started by Idi Amin when Bulang was the military headquarters.
Right.
It took us a year to finish it, because it's just a building, you know.
And
cement,
what are you doing
mortar.
In that building?
Oh, it houses CBS FM,
okay.
BBS Television,
right.
Buganda Land Board.
Right.
Our kingdom commercial enterprises are housed in that building. It was easy because it's just a building. You get blocks and you get cement and you're good to go. Now, the tombs, it's a different story. They are cultural mores you must respect. If you don't respect them, the clan leaders will not let you. They must make sure that you observe the customs that go along the rebuilding of the tombs. And we are trying to do that. But also the money involved is a lot. Some people don't realize that.
What about the Rubiri, the major palace?
The major palace, we have finished complete refurbishment of the Kabaka's residence. It is no mean feat, you know. Because we had, you know, when we took it from government, when the army quit, everything had been destroyed.
Talking about the army, I happen to have had a dubious privilege of spending a night in the former Kabaka's residence.
Oh, really?
In 1968, when we were being recruited as officer cadets in the Ugandan army.
You've been a soldier?
Yes, that is where we did the interviews.
This is
at what used to be major? The Rubiri Secondary School.
Now the school is back, actually.
Really?
We call it Rubiri High School.
But is it back in the palace?
Within the palace, yes. Within the palace grounds, yes.
What about the other one which had been built in at Rubaga?
It is there. It is called Rubiri Senior Secondary School.
Okay.
Ours is called Rubiri High School. It is owned by the kingdom 100%.
Very interesting.
And the Kabaka's residence has been refurbished. But we are doing a master plan because it is 264 acres.
Mm.
We are now about halfway through the drawing of the master plan to determine what you want to put where and to determine the kind of development you want to carry out.
Right.
It must be in tandem with the cultural values, yet it must fit the current times. It's a daunting task, but we're working on it.
Very interesting. One of the reasons that I have not asked you the question that I thought I'd have asked you is largely because you happen to be a very unique newsmaker. You seem to have a huge following.
Well, I'm the Prime Minister of the Kingdom of Buganda. Is
yes,
that big
indeed.
Enough?
And for that reason, there are a lot of people interested in your being hosted on Straight Talk Africa for the first time.
Well, I'm humbled.
There is a question, for example, from Emmanuel Churuma, asking, to what extent are kingdoms still relevant in modern African democracies?
Well, when people talk about African democracies, they're talking about the independent states of Africa.
Correct.
These are very young countries. Uganda is not even 100 years. Because the borders of Uganda, the last border, which I think incorporated, I think, parts of Bufumbira area, which they took away from Rwanda, Rwanda Urundi, they used to call it then,
right,
was in 1926, and even Karamoja.
Mm.
But then, for you to have Uganda, or for you to have any African country, you must have cultural entities, which were in place, which predate colonialism. And like I said a few minutes earlier, we do not live in a vacuum. Your Africanness is, I think, determined by the cultural base which defines you. That's why I gave myself as the example. My name. If you're called Maiga, you must belong to the Hart clan.
The Hart clan.
So I think cultural institutions are very relevant. I meet lots of actually Americans who are trying to trace their roots. Many of them, some from Africa, others from Europe, because they are told they came from somewhere. But that applies to us in Africa itself. For you to be a Kenyan, you must belong to one of the entities that comprise Kenya today. And that entity has a history. And in our case, which is a kingdom, you must try to understand, how did this happen?
Let me ask you a follow-up question on that. If you were to talk to me from the deepest, better part of the bottom of your Uganda heart and soul, do you believe that there is democracy in Uganda?
There are lots of challenges as far as democracy in Uganda is concerned. Because for democracy to thrive, you must have the rule of law.
Right.
For democracy to thrive, you must, you know, work within the institutions that sustain the state. You must have the respect of the law, ethos of good governance. And we do observe lots of challenges to all of this.
You need strong institutions and not strong men.
No. I think it's the institutions that we need. There is that concept that has been thrown around all over Africa, that Africa is so difficult to govern because you see there are many tribes, there are all sorts of theories that are pandered around.
I'm sure there are more tribes in India than there are in Uganda.
Of course, even here, because in the United States, some people came from France, others came from Germany, others came from Africa, others came from the Caribbean, others came from all over the world.
As a matter of fact, you are talking about a microcosm of the world.
Exactly. The only reason why the country thrived is because the founding fathers placed emphasis on institutional capacity building.
Right.
And observance of the rule of law. That's what Africa needs. Doesn't need strong men. Actually, what have strong men achieved for Africa other than destruction?
Very interesting. Now, it seems to me that the elephant in the room in your particular kingdom is land, land, land. What do you say about that?
Well, yeah, we've got a big challenge over land. One, the population it grows a lot. We actually do produce kids.
Yes.
And the land has been overused. Some villages have been tilled for hundreds of years. So a time comes when the land can't yield enough crop to feed the families, and people want to expand, but the land doesn't grow. Then there is corruption in the land offices. Then there is the weaknesses of the police. They fail to investigate land-related crimes. Then there is a lot of corruption in the courts and inefficiency. Cases don't get disposed of. Then there is political interference.
Let me be a bit democratically inclusive by giving you the specific question from Andrew Isavirie. Land problems in Buganda are partly linked to the kingdom's style of land distribution, offer, and management. What is Oweekitiibwa Katikkiro's strategy in the management of land ownership in Buganda?
But I think the Buganda Land Board, if it talks about management of land, is the most efficient land board in the country, the most modernized, using IT and all these things. I don't know whether he was referring to the 1900 agreement where there was distribution of land. But we never had chaos in the 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s and 70s.
Right.
We had the same land system. Why is it that we have chaos now? Because there is chaos in the land offices. Because there is corruption. Because the police can't investigate grabbers of land and bring them to book. Because the courts can't adjudicate land cases in a timely manner. I am a lawyer, and before I became Katikiro, because now I'm on sabbatical as far as legal practice is concerned, I don't have the time. I prosecuted a case for 10 years involving a small piece of land, and I couldn't get a judgment from the courts.
You couldn't?
No. And one of the parties died in the, along the way. Those are the challenges that we need to address. It has nothing to do with the 1900 agreement or the Milo land system. Whoever believes that has got a lot to learn.
Let me ask you this question. The kingdom was restored back in 1993.
Yes.
Are the people of Buganda better off today, for example, than they were in 1993?
I think so. One, we have the king. We are happy we've got our king. We have him. Okay? That is one. Two, the king has initiated so many programs that benefit the people. We've got a program, for example, called Mwanyitere Imba, or loosely translated as Coffee Doesn't Lie.
Right.
Where myself and colleagues, my cabinet colleagues, we go in the countryside, you know, rekindling the growing of coffee, because that's how you fight poverty. You fight poverty by making people do what they are capable of doing. 70% of our people are in the countryside. They can use their hoe. Mm. And we tell them, you should have coffee instead of running to the towns. An acre of coffee well looked after gives you about 10 to 12 million shillings a year. A million shillings a month. Not so much, but reasonable if you're in the countryside. And that's what we are doing. And people are very happy. Last year, we gave out 8.5 million seedlings. We work in collaboration with the Uganda Coffee Development Authority. You know, all these companies, BBS, CBS, they employ young people. We pay taxes to the government.
What about some people who say that when it comes to service delivery especially, and we're talking about, for example, health care, that the situation is very, very bad.
It is dire, actually. The healthcare system in Uganda is very, very frightening at the moment.
So what can you do about it?
Because, well, healthcare requires lots and lots of money. Lots and lots of money. We do what we can. We have a health program in the kingdom. Yes, we do.
But you have government.
But we concentrate on primary health care.
You have government officials who essentially go on medical tourism to South Africa for medical checkup, to India, the United Kingdom, to America and what have you.
The government of Uganda uses, I think, about $150 million on medical treatment of its officials outside the country. I don't know why they don't use that money to equip the hospitals with equipment, with drugs, and to pay the medical personnel adequately. I just don't understand it.
Like Mulago was used to be one of the finest referral hospitals in Africa.
Of course, Makerere University Medical School was the best in Africa.
Used to be the best.
For a very long time.
But can you believe now you have to go to Nairobi?
I just don't understand why they don't equip the hospitals. If they can spend $150 million on officials going for treatment all over the world, that money is reasonable to turn around Mulago Hospital.
Very interesting. Let me come to you, Oweshitibwa Mayiga. What would you say is the single most important decision that you have made since becoming the Right Honorable Prime Minister? And we're talking about 2013, correct?
Yes, I became Katikiro. Actually, today, on the 29th, marks 6 years since I was handed that mace.
Right.
The instrument of office,
right.
Damla in Luganda.
Right.
Well, I think that the single most fundamental thing, I think, reawakening the young people and making them cherish their heritage, I think for me is the most important thing.
What about the single most regrettable decision so far?
As Katikiro?
Yes.
I don't know. I can't think of one off the top of my head. Because you see, when you're Katikkiro, you don't work alone. I work with my... I've got a cabinet that the Kabaka gives me.
Right.
I sit with them every week.
Right.
I consult with the Kabaka as regular as possible.
Right.
I consult the clan leaders as regular as possible. So we the decisions we take are well thought out, I think, overall. And I can't really say that I've... I don't know what people are going to say, but I don't... I think I've committed major mistakes. I don't know how that sounds, but I don't think we've committed major mistakes.
Do you have any political ambitions that go beyond being the Katikkiro of Buganda, for example?
No, but people talk about it all the time.
Well, there was a time, for example, when it was rumored, very heavily rumored, that you were actually being considered by the Ugandan president, Yoweri Museveni, to be his vice president.
But he's never told me that. I've never heard it other than what I see on social media. This was, you know, social media is faceless. Somebody posted on social media that I was going to become the vice president. Of course, I'm not going to become the vice president. Certainly not now.
What do you think about...
Because I've got a job that the Kabaka wants me to carry out.
What do you think about one of your subjects, Bobi Wine, Robert Kyagulanyi?
Well, Bobi Wine is the darling of young people. And you must realize that the current regime has been around 33 years. That's
right.
A long time.
Right.
And Bobi Wine is an artist. You know, to communicate to people through music is very easy.
Do you agree with some who say that his future is ahead of him?
I don't know. It all depends on how we... wraps up his program and presents it to the people. I mean, the French president is very young. There is a president in Austria who's just resigned, the chancellor. I think he's resigned or something, I don't know. He's 32. I think he's younger than Kyagulanyi. President Obama became president at 43? President Kennedy was 42. So I don't think he's... But what matters is whether he's readied himself for the job.
Mm.
Beyond the euphoria of the youth.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's young. He's,
which is the majority
of
people.
The majority of the people. But then you see, if he wants to be president, he must have a program. Beyond the crowds. You know what I mean?
Can he count on the support of the Buganda Kingdom?
No, the Buganda Kingdom doesn't support or oppose anyone. The Buganda Kingdom has its own interests, and we wrap them up in five key pillars. We call them Ensonga Sema Songetan. There are five of them.
Mm.
Now, whoever wants our support should come over and tell us that he's going to support us. You know, you respect our heritage and king. We want a federal system of government. We want to protect our land and borders. We want programs for economic development, and we want the unit of the people. Those are the five key tenets of the Kingdom of Buganda. If he supports that, then the people should vote him, whoever supports them.
Really?
Yeah, really.
Well,
we neither support nor oppose anyone.
I see. Well, unfortunately, time is not our best ally. So on that note, today's distinguished guest was the Right Honorable Charles Peter Mayiga, the Katikkiro or Prime Minister of the Ugandan Kingdom of Buganda. Thanks to our audience for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Buganda. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.